Welcome, everyone, to another edition of the Tailwind Coaching Podcast with tips, tricks, and coaching discussions for everybody, whether you are a beginner cyclist, whether you are a weekend club rider, or whether you are an advanced longtime racer. I'm your host, Coach Rob, and on today's show, we're going to discuss the peak part of your training plan, that last 2 weeks before your major race, that 2 weeks that either makes or breaks your performance in that race, that big goal of your season, what the purpose of peak is, what peak is all about, the physiological aspects of it, what a good peak week should look like, and what the concept of building form versus building fitness is. So strap in, we got some good information coming, and I hope you guys are going to find this very beneficial, especially for this time of year. Okay, now, so before we get to our actual discussion on peaking, I would like to make a couple of announcements, a couple small announcements. Those of you on my Bat and Kill program, pay very close attention to this podcast today. This is going to be very important as to what you, what your rides and what your week is going to look like coming up here in the next 10 days or so before the race. Speaking of Bat and Kill, I will be at Bat and Kill starting Friday, actually Saturday morning, and I will be over Sunday night. Those of you who are listeners who are interested in finding me, you can find me up there. It won't be too hard. I've got my name placard on the side of my bike, and you guys will not have a problem finding me. So I'm very much looking forward to going up there and, you know, meeting some of my listeners and, you know, hanging out with some of my athletes and basically just having a great time and having a great race. The atmosphere around the Tour of the Bat and Kill is just phenomenal. And if you haven't ever seen it or witnessed it or you really have no clue about what it's about, take a look at either my review on the Daily Grind Cycling Journal, or take a look at some of the other race reports that have been put up there. I know Embarkation has done a couple of them. There may even be a couple in Bicycling Magazine. I'm not entirely sure on that. But definitely give it a good look. The race is a fantastic, fantastic event, and the whole atmosphere is really, really just awesome. It's one of the few places you don't get that stereotypical race, roadie racer snobbish mentality. And probably for the fact that it's just one of those ridiculous hard men races. Now, that being said, and with classic season here, we're right in the middle of Holy Week. We've got Paris-Roubaix coming up on Sunday, which is just absolutely freaking best time of the year. It's an awesome time of the year to be a cycling fan. The spring classics, there's nothing quite like them. The excitement, the energy, and basically just how absolutely insane Belgium is as a cycling nation is fantastic to see on TV. In the spirit of the classics, I have just released another high-intensity trainer workout, another HIIT workout called the Berg Buster. Those of you who follow me on Strava, you may have seen me working on this a little bit on Strava, on some of my trainer rides inside. Putting the finishing touches on it. The reason it hasn't come out earlier in the classic season is because I want to make sure that this program was well designed for you, for my listeners and customers, and I also want to make very sure that it does exactly what I'm looking for it to do, and and that is to make you proficient in climbing medium length, about a mile in length or less, steeper kinds of climbs, grades, the basically paying homage to the Bergs of the Flemish classics, you know, the Mur, the Mur de Huy, the Gerardsbergen, the Paterberg, you know, things like that, these tough climbs. So my gift to my listeners and to my readers, if you go on to tailwind-coaching.com or you look up the Daily Grind Cycling Journal, one of those posts on there, I believe it's going to be the one exactly right below this podcast post. If you're listening to the podcast on my website, you can actually go on there and you can get that high-intensity trainer workout for nothing. Zero. Nada. Nothing. Zip. Okay? There is a coupon right there. It's a $10 workout normally. There's a coupon on there. Use the code CLASSICSGIFT. No space in between. CLASSICSGIFT. And you can take 100% off that Bergbuster high-intensity trainer workout. Free for you guys until the end of the classics. Okay, so when La Doyenne gets here, it's over. So get in there and grab it while you can. Okay, that's the real only major announcement I've got going on. Typical announcements, you can find this podcast if you're obviously listening onto the website. Thank you for finding it. You can either find it on iTunes, you can find me on Stitcher, you can find me on Podbean at the moment. So take a few minutes and take a look at those services. There's some great services. So with that being said, and with the housekeeping all in order, let's get to the topic of the day. Let's get to peaking, what it is, what it's all about, and how you can peak to have probably your best race ever. Okay, now if you're listening to this podcast and you're discussing and thinking about peaking, chances are you're probably already following a periodized training program. For those of you who are not following a periodized program, let me explain a little bit here for you. Periodized training is simply a method by which an athlete or a coach structures a series of workouts towards certain goals, usually A, B, or C level goals. C goals being, not terribly important. B level goals being, I really could kind of like to do well at that. And the A goal is your primary goal of either the season or the spring or the fall or the summer or whatever the case may be. And typically, you see periodized training in terms of racing. A lot of club riders, a lot of group riders, people who just like to hit their local shop rides will also partake in periodized training for a number of reasons. Whether or not it's the discipline of periodized training that helps them, you know, get out and ride, whether or not it's just the desire to be better, whether or not it's a personal vendetta against, Joe Sixpack on the Tuesday Night Worlds who keeps beating you, you know, on that last climb to the finish. Everybody has their own motivation, but, you know, I digress from that. Periodized training usually is broken up into a couple of different things. You have a macro cycle, which is basically your year-long program, a program that takes you from opening part of the season, from the off-season in maybe December, all the way through October, or if you're cyclocross, maybe you're starting in March or April, and you're heading off to December, January. that macro cycle, that big cycle, is broken up into much smaller segments called mesocycles, which are usually blocks of 4 weeks worth of training. It usually encompasses a couple of weeks of progressive increasing training stress, followed by a little bit of recovery. And those mesocycles or mesocycles are usually broken up into four microcycles. A microcycle you could think of as a single week's worth of training and recovery at a time. I like to use a term called a super mesocycle of grouping 3 or 4 months worth of training, or 3 to 4 mesocycles worth of training altogether. Some people call it a block. Some people call it a season. Some people will call it a goal block or what. There's a ton of different things you can call it. But basically, what it is, that's your entire training plan. And of course, if you bought my Bat and Kill training plan, that would be considered a super meso cycle. Or if you're following my modular training programs, you would be thinking of a base build peak collection as a super mesocycle. But basically, a super mesocycle is your entire training up to an A level event, and it's almost always capped off by a couple of peak microcycles or a peak mesocycle. Now, what is peak and what is the concept of peaking? Well, peak is usually anywhere between 1 week and 2 weeks worth of very specific, very directed training that is designed to hone the skills necessary to perform well in your chosen goal event. And it is also extremely, extremely important to balance intensity, frequency, duration, and rest and recovery. In fact, there's actually, I actually would like to submit and like to think, like to suggest to anybody who's listening here, because I've gotten questions about, geez, my performance was really shitty. Pardon my language, but coming from an athlete, my performance really shitty after one of these blocks of peak, or I was tapered down and I should have been great. I was rested. What's going on? I'd like to suggest that your peak performance, Okay, that performance in that A race is not driven by what you've done in the base phase, in the build phase, in the late build phase. It's not driven by the amount of work you've done, by the amount of training stress you've accumulated. It's not driven by the amount of fitness you've accumulated. Okay, I would like to suggest to all of you who are listening that your performance in that A-level race is based upon the amount and quality of work you do in that week to 10 to 14 days, call it 1 to 2 weeks, of peak prior to that race. You can be one of the fittest riders in the peloton, and if you've squandered those two peak weeks or that peak week, if you squandered that peak time and you've done your body a disservice, I can almost guarantee 100% you will be off the back, or you will be wondering what happened to these awesome, awesome legs that I had 2 weeks ago, a week ago. What happened to them? Now I feel like crap. My legs are heavy. My legs hurt. My lungs are just, my body's just not doing it. I feel like I'm out of breath. I can't follow accelerations. What's going on? I'd like to suggest that no matter how fit you are, obviously, now back up half a second here. I'd like to suggest that you have to be fit to perform well in a race. That goes without saying. But I'd like to suggest that even if you're extremely fit, you can sabotage that by what's going on in the peak week. And the reason why is because you have a very small window to overdo, overexert yourself, and essentially burn yourself up before you hit that race day. And that's why peaking is so important, okay? So if knowing that, knowing the importance of peak, what do we do to make sure that we peak well? What is the concept of peaking from a frequency, intensity, duration standpoint, from a coaching standpoint? Well, I'm going to give you the answer. It's going to be really, really simple. So with all that background being given, the concept of peaking and a peak week is generally to keep your intensity levels extremely high. We're talking race level intensity. Now that doesn't mean go out the weekend before a big A race and do a stage race. Okay. If you have C level races or C priority races, maybe a short criterium type race or a short circuit race, something that you can work at, you can go into race and then recover reasonably quickly. Those are the kind of efforts that you need to be putting out during your peak week. So the idea is race level intensity, very high intensity with short durations. You don't want to be doing 7 or 8, 9 hours a week of training the week prior to a race. You want to allow your body to recover and adapt and to build form. Now, in terms of frequency is something that is very individual, and it's something that only really with practice can you fine-tune. In some cases, people will do half an hour high-intense efforts, VO2 max, zone 5, 6, even zone 7 level efforts, 35, 45 minutes every single day. Some people do an hour every other day. Some people do a half hour and then a day off and then a couple hours and then a day off and then an hour. And it's very, extremely variable. But the idea is frequency should be high, intensity should be high, duration should be low during a peak week. So those are your three main paradigms or three main components of what makes a training week. And that gives you some guidance as to where you should go. But it doesn't really tell us what is a peaking model look like. What is a peaking model? What does it look like? Well, it's actually fairly simple if you think about it. We just talked about keeping your intensity extremely high, your frequency moderately high, medium to high level, and your duration fairly low. So if you're familiar with a performance management chart, which most of you probably are, performance management chart will chart your fatigue, your ATL, your fitness, your CTL, or chronic training load, versus acute training load, and it will also track your training stress balance. Well, the peaking model is designed to build your form. If you're looking at your training, your performance management chart, which now that we're talking about it, I'm hoping you guys have looked it up and you're pulled it up on your computer. Your form is essentially your training stress balance. Okay? Your form should be that training stress balance. And that's the goal of a peak week, is to prepare you for a high performance by increasing, building, giving you a positive training stress balance. You do that through short duration efforts. All right, you taper the duration of your efforts down while you maintain the intensity that you had been doing at the end of your build period. And you do them frequently. And essentially during those, instead of doing useless skills that you've done, I shouldn't say useless skills, but skills that you practiced over and over and over again, you should be focusing almost exclusively on the skills that will help you perform during that A priority race. Okay, through that combination of goals, you should actually see an increase in form or a positive training stress balance, while your chronic training load, your CTL, or your fitness stays very flat or drops very, 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 very small amounts. Okay, that, folks, is exactly what the key to peaking is. And the question really is, the question a lot of people ask me is why does that kind of thing work? Well, here's something to think about. If your form is essentially your training stress balance, and you are trying to get a positive training stress balance, that requires you to rest, to recover. If you look at examples of performance management charts and things on the web or on my website, on tailwind-coaching.com or on the Daily Grind, you will see that with rest, your ATL, your acute training load, or your fatigue drops. And it drops very quickly. Your chronic training load or your fitness drops much more slowly. And your training stress balance or your form increases almost proportionally with the decrease in fatigue. All right, so that's what happens during rest and recovery. And we also know that physiologically during rest and recovery, your body strengthens. There's a couple of problems with that during a peak cycle or a peak a block or a peak microcycle, if you want to look at it that way. One is that you don't want your fitness, your CTL, to drop too far. So you have to do some kind of effort. You have to do some kind of work to maintain that fitness, especially if you're peaking for like a 10-day period or 2-week period or something like that. In most cases, people love to do short, intense efforts during that peak period because it helps to build training stress quickly, it helps to maintain that fitness, and it helps to mitigate the amount of fatigue you accumulate. Sure, you do a lot of work in a short period of time, but you have excess time to rest and undo the damage that your body has done during those high-intensity efforts. Okay? So short, intense efforts hold your fitness or your CTL steady. They prevent it from dropping or dropping significantly, while it allows your acute stress or your fatigue to drop because you've increased the amount of recovery. You've prioritized your recovery. All right. That combination allows your training stress balance to go into the positives, which it basically means that you're building form. Now, I said a little bit further back that your peak performance is not really driven by what you do in the base period or the build period or anything else. It's driven by what you do in that peak microcycle. The reason it is because if you go into an A-level race fatigued, with a high fatigue level, a low training stress balance, you're almost guaranteed to really perform poorly. You're not fresh. Your body's not fresh. It's not ready to go. It's not ready to kick ass. It just doesn't happen. That's why you really need to be very, very cognizant. And those of you who use a power meter, I love you guys, and I love your number crunching. But for those of you who are using a power meter, this is the time to sit and stare at that performance chart on WKO, on Training Peaks, or on Golden Gear, whatever you're looking at. This is that time that you need to get at after every single ride. Plug in that Garmin, plug in that Joule, whatever your computer is, plug it in, download that data, and look at your performance charts. You have to keep on top of it. If you see that you've gone way too hard in a couple of those workouts, you need to dial it back immediately. You have to be extremely, extremely cognizant of the amount of work you're doing and the amount of recovery your body is getting. Because if you overdo it during peak week, you blow your chances at a good performance. And that's exactly what you do not want to do. Especially if you've spent, 18 weeks or whatever getting prepped for a race like some of these bat and kill racers are, only to go into a peak week and blow it all up. You just don't want to do that. So keep an eye on your recovery. Keep an eye on your ATL, your CTL, your fatigue and your fitness. Keep an eye on your form or your balance, your stress balance, and you're on your way to a great performance. Okay? So with the numbers part of it out of the way, I have to give one special little caveat to this. And that is it's impossible for, I shouldn't say it's impossible. It is extremely difficult for an athlete, a coach, or anybody else to look at another person's performance chart, look at their fatigue, look at their fitness, look at their training stress balance, and determine if they're going to have a peak performance. Without any other data, no interaction from the athlete, no notes on when they had great performances or not. What's really important for you as an athlete is to go back. First of all, you have to be able to, have to have been documenting your rides and your races and everything else, saying when you did very well, when you felt good, when you placed well, et cetera, et cetera. But going back to those previous performances where you had a good day, for example, look at what your training stress balance was on those peak performances, on those excellent performances. That should be your goal for your peak form, for your peaking week. You need to hit that goal at least to see what kind of performance you're going to do. If you can hit that goal, for example, one particular athlete that I look at their performance management chart, and I see that they had an excellent performance with a training stress balance of +6. All right, now it doesn't matter what units we're using, just use +6 for the, purposes of the discussion. With a +6 training stress balance, this particular athlete did extremely well at one of their chosen events. So my recommendation to that athlete, and because they actually spent time to document how they were feeling and document how they performed, my recommendation to that athlete is during your peak week, you basically want to adjust your training schedule and your recovery schedule so that you go into that race at +6 training stress balance. That's what you need to be doing. Even a little more might be okay, even a little less might be okay, but there's a very narrow window there for peak performance. And that's what I would tell that athlete to pay attention to and attempt to do. Some of the programs that will do future graphing or graph future workouts can be very, very handy for this kind of thing. So Training Peaks Online is one of them. There is also I believe WKO will do this, but I'm not sure about Golden Cheetah or Power Agent or any of the other ones. So keep in mind that you need to be able to hit that previous peak performance number if you really want to have a shot at a peak performance without taking a stab in the dark. Those of you who are new to this, you kind of have to just take that stab in the dark and say, all right, you know what? I'm not entirely sure. I can look back through some of my data and see where I've had decent days, and you can extrapolate that a little bit, but you are going to be, you're going to be reaching a little bit for that magic number, so to speak. So that all being said, the concept of building form explained, and the concept of the peak model and tapering your duration while you maintain your intensity, there's another very physiological, very non-coaching related part of peaking that most people don't think about, and they don't even, even if they think about it, they probably really don't understand it, because it is gets into some really deep neurophysiological type responses. And that is, it's what I like to call the painkiller model. So the main question is, why is this important? Okay, so the painkiller model. Being being that I have a degree in exercise physiology, this kind of thing is right up my alley. At least in terms of the neurophysiology and the biochemistry of it. But almost every single one of you who's listening to this will understand this concept. And I'll explain to you how. So how many of you out there who are listening have taken a week off from training? Something has happened. Maybe your bike has broken. Maybe you're like me, your power meter just up and decided to quit on you after a particular ride, and you had to send it back to the manufacturer. Thank you very much, Quark. You can read about that on my on my blog. Both times it had happened, actually. But I digress. How many times have you actually had to take about a week off the bike? No training at all. And, you know, your body feels sore, achy, stiff, tired, unhappy, generally, you know, miserable. And how many times have you gotten back on the bike? And when you get back on the bike, you the first ride back, you just feel, holy crap, I feel terrible. You know, I get back on the bike, I had a week to rest, I should be feeling awesome, and I get back on and my legs are heavy and they don't want to move, and my cadence is really slow, and my lungs are really, you know, not working to capacity, and I really feel stiff and sore, and I'm... Hands up. I can bet that almost every single one of you that's listening to me right now has got your hand up and you're saying, yeah, I've been there, I've done that, and I understand that. Well, there's a reason for that, okay? I call it the painkiller model. Really, it's a neurophysiological response. It's a fight or flight response. And there's been a lot of study done on this. And if you really go to PubMed and start doing some research on it, you can find the physiological mechanisms of it. But basically, exercise. If you look at a human being from really a basal standpoint, human beings have a fight or flight reflex. So this is developed from the time we were not even Homo sapiens, but, you know, Homo erectus or Neanderthal type creatures, where we had a choice of either fight something that was threatening us or run from it, flight. The same systems that control that fight or flight reflex are the same systems that we use as athletes. That's the same system that we use as athletes to exercise. Exercise is basically, and training specifically, training is really a prolonged fight or flight response, okay? And this is in contrast to the rest and digest response that we get if we spend about a week off the bike, okay? So exercise being like a prolonged flight, essentially, your body doesn't know that it's on a bike and it's training. Your body physiologically thinks that it's running away from a predator. Okay, so imagine you're being chased by there's a very famous quote of something about a training being like wrestling with a gorilla. You don't stop when you're tired. You stop when the gorilla is tired. So your body is basically acting like it's running away from a big gorilla. Okay, so what your body does, it produces a certain numbers of chemicals, it produces certain hormones. Basically, you've heard of endorphins. Endorphins are chemicals produced during that fight or flight response, during exercise, in this case, or training in this case, that get into the body. They actually come from the anterior part of the pituitary gland, and they get into the body, and they react throughout the body in a... analgesic type effect, meaning that they affect pain-killing pathways in the body. Now, ideally, those pain-killing pathways are stimulated by these endorphins, and they're activated by these endorphins. Now, there's some really really complex biochemistry and neurobiochemistry as to how that happens, about, you know, these endorphins bind to dopamine, you know, neurotransmitter sites, and I'm not going to get into that. There's no point in getting into that. The bottom line is, during your exercise or your training, this prolonged flight response, your body is releasing endorphins, which increase natural analgesics, natural opiates in the body, painkillers. From an evolutionary standpoint, the reason why that happens is so that your body, your brain, does not realize the damage you're doing to your muscle tissue and to your body systems, because you have to get away from that lion or that gorilla that's chasing you. So if your brain says, ow, my legs hurt, I can't run anymore, your dinner or lunch or breakfast or whatever happened, whatever time of day it happens to be, okay, that's what happens. You don't want to be dinner, so your body basically shuts off those pain signals. It dulls those pain signals, and it basically tells you, you're good to go. Keep on going, keep on going, keep on going, okay? So basically, to recap real quick, exercise is a fight-or-flight response. Your body is designed to, for that flight response, to release painkillers so that you can continue that flight response so you don't end up dead. All right? That's why during training blocks, many times we can tear ourselves apart and still feel pretty good the next day. Go, wow, you know, I don't feel too bad. I'm going to go out and hit it again. And then a couple days later, you go out and hit it again. And then a day or two later, you go out and hit it again. You don't feel too bad. However, when you do a rest block, and this is actually the perfect explanation as to why a lot of people have said, you know, why do guys do in the Tour de France? Why do they ride? Why do they go out and do a 4 or 5 hour ride on their rest day? They're supposed to be resting. True. And they're not doing a race type effort usually on that rest day, and they're not usually doing like a 6 hour ride. But what they're doing is they're prolonging this fight or flight response. Because what happens when your body enters that rest and digest phase or stage or state, not only does it rest and digest, it digests food, it also digests those endorphins and those opioid painkillers, those endogenous opioids, those endogenous painkillers, which block those signals of pain from your body tissues. So here you've done a whole bunch of damage. Imagine this scenario. You've done a 3 week block of training. You've gone out hard. It's a build block. You've done 8 hours, 10 hours, 12 hours a week, whatever, what have you. And you've trained really very hard, and you've actually made some progress, and you feel like your fitness is up there. You come to a rest week, and that rest week says, I'm going to do 3 rides this week for about 4 hours of work. Okay. I don't have time to do those three rides. I'm going to take the entire week right off. No big deal. Okay. You come back from that, and you suddenly feel like junk. The reason why you feel like junk is because during that week, your body ate up all of those opioid painkillers, all of those endorphins, and your body is actually really starting to feel the true amount of fatigue that it's absorbed. Okay? So your body is fatigued, and it's actually starting to show it because there's no chemistry there to block that feeling. That, folks, is exactly why people ride, you know, tour riders ride on their rest day. They need to keep that fight or flight reflex primed. They need to keep that endorphin, opioid painkiller system primed so that they can have a good performance the next day. All right, you've heard of the announcers, you've heard of Phil Liggett and Paul Sherwin say they don't know how people are going to respond after a rest day. Some people have a bad day after a rest. Yeah, if you actually rest on a rest day, you're going to lose a lot of that fight or flight neurochemical endorphin opioid painkiller system, and you're going to ride like crap the next day. Are we getting the picture here? This is why, this goes right back to why, during our peak week, we maintain our intensity, we maintain or increase our frequency, but we significantly decrease our duration. Fight or flight reflex depends on high intensity stimulation in order to work. So by stimulating our body and our muscles and our systems to work at a high level frequently during that rest week, we maintain a stable level of endorphins, a stable level of opioid, endogenous opioid painkillers, and a stable level of form, actually an increasing level of form, a stable level of fitness. Okay. So the bottom line, if you take a rest week, now quite a while back, I actually had, it was actually a patient of mine whose son was a fairly decent quality racer, road racer. He went to Empire State Games, if I remember this correctly. Now, this was a couple of years ago. He went to Empire State Games and, very, very good racer. But his father told me he felt horrible. And I said, well, what did he do? What did he do for his week or week and a half prior? Well, he tapered. I said, what did his taper involve? Well, his taper kind of involved, he did a lot of resting and he rode, I think he said he went out for 1 day. 1 day. How many days did he taper for? He tapered for about 10 days and he rode for like 1 day out of that. So, those of you who are listening, who have kind of grasped the concept of the painkiller model and the idea of building form and what peak week is all about. Basically, you have a racer here who he took 10 days rest, and his form went way up. Sure, his fitness probably dropped a little bit. His fatigue dropped a little bit. Actually, his fatigue probably dropped a lot. So, significant drop in fatigue, a little drop in fitness, and a huge increase in form, yet he performed horrendously. The answer comes right down to the fact that he spent too long on the couch and let all those endorphins and endogenous opioids get eaten up, so that when he went back out on the bike, the bottom line here, folks, he could not hurt himself enough to stay in the race. And that's exactly what this painkiller model allows you to do. And this is exactly why we need to hurt ourselves, high intensity, high frequency, short duration stuff. That's exactly why we need this during the peak week. Because if we don't, we can't hurt ourselves enough to perform well. If we follow a proper peaking microcycle, we will still be able to hurt ourselves as much as we did in training, if not more. And that is what will lead us to a peak excellent performance in our A priority event. So tying it all together, the reason we do a peak is to increase our form. We increase our training stress balance. We decrease our fatigue. We decrease our acute training load. We maintain or very slightly decrease our fitness, which is our chronic training load. We do that by keeping race level intensity, focused skills, which will help us succeed in that A priority race, low duration, high frequency, with excessive, not even excessive, but appropriate amounts of recovery post-activity, and high enough intensity that we can maintain a certain level of endogenous opioid painkillers and endorphins in our body, so that we can have high form, we can have excellent form, low fatigue, high fitness, and high ability to hurt ourselves during a race, to make ourselves hurt. Remember, folks, this is an A priority event. If you're not ready to basically throw up after you get to the finish line, you didn't leave it all out there, and this really wasn't one of your most gutsy A priority event performances. All right, this is really an A priority event for you, leave it all out on the route. Leave it all out on the race course, guys. Okay? If you throw up on the way, if that's what it takes to get you to finish that race in a high position or to win that race, do it. You can always rest a little bit afterwards. Okay? You can always recover afterwards. But if you've done a peaking cycle, a peaking microcycle properly, you guys are going to be flying come race day. I can guarantee that. The physiology says you will. The physiological theory says you will. The neurochemical physiology says you will. And you know what? I've seen it happen over and over and over again. And I've seen it happen when people don't do the right thing either. I've seen it happen when people actually do the wrong thing. And it's not pretty. So don't be one of those people. Okay? Now, closing up here, guys, I just want to thank all of you guys for listening. If you have questions for me, I know there's a lot of material covered in this one. If people have questions for me, you can always get a hold of me, coachrobdc@gmail.com. You can also find me on my website. There's a ton of different ways to get a hold of me, tailwind-coaching.com. Hosted on the Daily Grind Cycling Journal. You can find me there. You can find my email there. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Facebook at Tailwind Coaching. You can find this podcast, and you can find me on Stitcher and on Podbean. You can find me on iTunes. And I welcome all of you guys who've listened to this. Go ahead and give me if you're happy, go ahead and give me a rating on iTunes. If you think I suck, go ahead and give me a rating on iTunes either way. But go ahead and please do rate the podcast for the information you found here, and hopefully it'll help you out. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. Ride safe, ride happy, get strong, be well, peak well, and keep the rubber side down. All right. I'll talk to every one of you very soon.